Hello, I'm Roderick Matthews. This podcast is about my new book, my third about India, entitled The Great Indian Rope Trick: Does the Future of Democracy Lie with India? First, let me explain that title. It refers to the legendary magic trick where a magician was able to make a rope stand upright, apparently without support. I use this trick as a metaphor for the fate of India's democracy, which has been expected to fall by many people many times, yet somehow it has stayed upright. The second part of the title, Does the Future of Democracy Lie with India?, refers to an idea of mine, which is that India has many lessons to teach the rest of the world about how to sustain democracy in a multi-ethnic, multi-faith, multilingual society. India was the first democratic country to confront these problems, and with some reservations and the odd blip along the way, has largely solved them. And the book examines why this is the case and how it came to pass. So, what else is in the book? Well, plenty. It takes a look at how both the theory and the practice of democracy have worked out in India with a great deal of fascinating detail, which I can't go into now. I'm afraid you'll have to buy the book and read it for that. The book also contains a section looking at democracy across the whole of South Asia, looking at the development of other states in the region, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, Burma, Myanmar, and Sri Lanka. Again, there's a lot of fascinating detail in this section where I make comparisons in the way that the problems of violence, sectarianism, minorities, regionalism, federalism, and military rule have all been variously dealt with in these states. I also make a detailed comparison across the region of how things seem to have gone right in India in the way that they often seem to have gone wrong elsewhere, in terms of, for instance, the writing of constitutions and the way this was done. My main conclusion about that is that India actually got on with the job of writing a constitution very early and did it in the right way, using the language of nation states, whereas several of the other countries didn't do that. India wrote her constitution very early, within 3 years of independence, and the Indians wrote that constitution themselves with their own priorities. This was not always the case in the region. For instance, Sri Lanka was given a constitution, as was Burma. Pakistan couldn't write one, and Nepal is still trying to write one. There are several distinctive qualities to Indian democracy. The first is that the modern Indian state did not emerge from indigenous society. It grew out of colonial rule, and politics then grew around the state. India thus ended up with a rather small state compared to the society it inhabited. This has encouraged the proliferation of mediators and dealers in influence and access. This has helped nurture a political culture of fixing, of deal-making, as much as of principle. A second distinctive feature of Indian democracy is its pragmatism, that government policy stays roughly the same over long periods. What tends to change is an administrative detail, that is, who it is that's administering. The book makes a number of important points which I don't think have necessarily been made in quite this way by other people. One is that Indians came to a concept of injustice via the concept of the nation, not via a concept of society. The concept of injustice grew up alongside the national struggle in India, so that injustice became a national issue, not just a social issue, which is why the constitution was written the way it was, with the first word in it, the first abstract word in it, is the word justice. There are several other observations to be made about the nature of politics in India. One thing is the incomplete integration between national and local politics, which is very patchy. It's much easier to be a regional leader in India than it is to be a national leader, and most of the great figures in Indian history who have been national leaders have been almost above politics. This is primarily because it's much easier to put together a large coalition of people in India by being against things than by being for things. This is the essential basis of the mass movements led by people like Mahatma Gandhi and then later J.P. Narayan. It's very hard for political parties to grow into national institutions in India. Only two have ever managed it. The Congress Party, after independence, and over recent decades, the BJP has managed to put together a new coalition of entrepreneurs, middle-class people, particular kinds of rural sections, to create a new national movement, a national feeling, and to reinvent Indian nationalism. We've had, you know, UPA 1, UPA 2, NDA 1, NDA 2. We've had Indian Nationalism 1, which is a sort of Gandhi-Nehru project, and now we have Indian Nationalism 2, which is Narendra Modi project. The book contains a narrative history of Indian politics from independence to the election of 2014 and a little further. I also look in the book at various threats to India's democracy, military coup, separatism, economic collapse, intercommunal violence, secession, terrorism, armed insurgency. All of these things have been real threats to states in the region, but none of them at the moment are enormously threatening to India. India has more of a problem with endemic violence and, of course, corruption, which is a concern for people both high and low, and it affects very large sections of the population at times. There aren't easy answers to any of these things. The current government is sworn to combat all of these problems, and we shall see how they do. Lastly, I do a little guesswork about the future of Indian democracy in the hands of Narendra Modi and the BJP. I'm a little bit more optimistic than many of the left-wing columnists who foresee terrible dangers ahead. But, of course, there are real problems, particularly with extreme views of people on the right of Indian nationalism. Personally, I believe Modi to be rather more of a money man than an ideologue. And some on the right agree with me. Overall, the BJP, despite its majority, which is slightly exaggerated by the first-past-the-post system, after all, the BJP is currently ruling on a base of 31% support. It would be untrue to imagine that somehow the party or its leader had somehow transcended politics. India is a very complex country and is very difficult to rule, and Narendra Modi still needs friends in many places in order to accomplish his stated aims. And he faces a major contradiction in that most of the people who are against his more reforming economic policies are the very people who are not about to deliver the new prosperity that Modi foresees. So there's a strong contradiction within the right there between its economic wing, which he represents, and the more ideological, more traditional, more conservative, more religious wing, which he is currently, while not supporting, he's not shouting them down. One final comment about the Modi agenda. I think we can actually see now the development of a distinctly Indian approach to modernity, something that was lost in the disaster of 1857 and has not since been recovered until now. Overall, it's a book I very much enjoyed writing, and there's a lot of very fascinating detail and material in it. The world is going through testing times. And one of my conclusions is that we need large organisations, large political units like India in order to secure our future. But we also need small units within them to make the reality of self-government feel real. Because if democracy doesn't deliver self-government that feels real to people, it cannot survive. I conclude that India has lessons to teach the rest of the world. If democracy can work there, it can work anywhere. And that, surely, must be a good thing, especially considering the alternatives. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.